Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. We had a brief unannounced week hiatus last week, but that was because the game that we are talking about today, we didn't feel like we could give a fair assessment of the game with the number of times that we'd played it by last week. So we took another week, played the game a couple more times, and now we are here to give you a more informed picture of what this game is about.
It is big, it is deep, it is Tapestry, designed by Jamie Stegmaier and published in 2019 by Stonemaier Games.
This game was released very recently.
Just
like a month and a half, 2 months ago, something like that.
Yeah.
We pre-ordered a copy, we got it in 2 weeks ago, and we started playing it, and we haven't stopped.
Yeah.
So just to give a short description of what Tapestry is about, by the way, this is a regularly scheduled weekly episode, which means that we are going to be talking about this one game. We're going to talk about how to play it, some strategies in the game, and we're going to talk about the design of the game.
Yes.
All right, so Tapestry. In Tapestry, players play out the history of a civilization from start to finish over the course of five ages. At the beginning of each age, players collect resources, then take turns spending resources to progress on the four advancement tracks. Advancing on the tracks rewards players with increased income and actions that help advance technology, explore and expand parts of the map, build up their capital city, and score points. Players can progress to the next era on their turn whenever they choose by taking an income action instead of advancing. This means some players may progress two further eras sooner than their opponents, including the final era. When a player enters the final era, the only actions they take is the part of the income action that advances technology and scores points. Then they are done playing until all other players are also done. After the last player enters their final age, the player with the most points wins. So that is a short description of what Tapestry is all about.
Right.
It's a game about exploring, expanding, and advancing civilizations and technologies until you've reached the end.
Yep.
So at this point, let's talk a little bit more about how to play the game. Let's get into more detail there.
Right.
And then we'll get into the strategies.
So, there are these five eras, and... Mm-hmm. You start the game doing one of these automatically, these income turns.
Right.
And during an income turn...
So I suppose we should start by saying there's two actions that you take on your turn, and that's either income or advance.
Right. So the income turn, which is what you have to do first thing, you gain resources, of which there are four. There's food, money, workers, and culture. Each of these has a different color, and each of them is pretty much assigned with a different part of the board. You get a tapestry card, which is a card that will grant you powerful effects each age. And then you gain points if you have the ability to gain points. You'll be uncovering spaces on this board throughout the game that either let you get more points or more resources. And then you get a tile... which are the plots of land that you explore to. On the
game board.
Right. And then from there, you go ahead and take your first action, which... So the main thing you do advancing, you pay a resource cost, and then you advance a little player cube down a track. Each track has 12 spaces?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And... each space is in a different tier, and what tier it's in determines what its resource cost is.
Right. So like you said, there's four different kinds of resources. When you're advancing to a advancement level in the first tier on any track, it's going to cost one of any resource, your choice. Then when you get into the second tier of any given advancement track, it'll cost one generic resource and one resource of a specific type to that advancement tracker. So the four trackers are exploration, technology, military, and science. And respectively, the resources you use to advance on those are food, money, culture, and people. or workers or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and the cost increases, so at first it's so just it, one of any resource.
Yeah, then it's one in a specific resource. Then in the third age, it's two generic resources plus that one specific one for a total of three. And then in the fourth age, it's always two of the specific resource to that tracker.
Right. So the number of resources goes down, but it's specified to what the track is.
Yes.
All right. And each space on the track has its own outcome that you get.
Right. There are benefits. In this game, it's called a benefit.
Yeah. There are benefits, which you get automatically. And then there are bonuses, which are optional extra payments to get another effect.
Right. So, for example, on the exploration tracker, when you advance to the first level on that tracker, you pay a generic resource, and the benefit is to get two tiles from the stack. Then when you advance to the second space on that tracker, you explore, which means you take one of the piles or one of the tiles that you have and you put it on the board adjacent to a space that you control with your outposts. So essentially, you'll control a portion of the map at the start of the game, and this lets you add more tiles to the map and start to explore new territories.
Right.
That space also has a bonus where if you pay one generic resource, you can also draw a tapestry card.
Right. Sorry, I think we should go ahead and go over just some of the typical actions you'll see on the advancement track.
Sure. Okay, so we talked about exploration, which is all about drawing these tiles and adding them to the map.
Right, and when you each of these tiles has a bonus on it, or not a bonus, but like a resource or something you get from it when you explore. You could call it
just an action or a benefit.
Yeah, an effect.
An effect. That happens, yes, like you said, when you explore. So when you add that tile to the map, you will then gain a bonus. For example, if it's a resource that is on the tile, then when you explore that land, you gain one of that resource. It could also be a income building, which will let you build an income building, and we'll get to what that means in a second. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other actions that can show up on tiles. So that's the generic. That's the gist of what will happen when you're on the exploration tracker.
Let's go to military.
On the military tracker, it has a special action called Conquest that shows up often. When you conquest, you take one of your outposts that you have in your supply, and you place it on a space on the map adjacent to one of the spaces you already control, or you can choose to place it in a space that you do already control. A space can't have more than two outposts on it. So if you do put your outpost in a space you already control, that means that nobody else could attempt to gain control of it with their outposts. But generally, you're better off expanding. So put your outpost down in another space. And then after you do that, you get to roll these unique dice called the Conquer Dice, which one of them will give you some amount of points. The other one will usually give you a resource of some kind. And when you roll the Conquer Dice, you choose which dice to gain the reward from.
Right. And if you conquer a space where an opponent already has an outpost and there's room for one more, you topple their outpost, and they no longer control that space, and you do. It's your space. So
exploration is all about drawing tiles and adding them to the board. Conquering is all about spreading your pieces out and having control over the board.
Yeah.
Next tracker we can talk about is technology.
Right.
So technology has a unique action called inventing. There is a trade row of technology cards in this game that is constantly replenished as people deplete it. To acquire a card from a trade from the technology row, you have to take the invent action. This is symbolized by a yellow card. And the invent action lets you take one piece of technology and then place it next to your player board at the lowest technology tier, I guess we could call it,
right,
which is symbolized by an X. That just means you're starting to research the technology. But in order to fully research it and make it a part of your civilization, you need to upgrade it. There's another symbol that shows up on the technology tracker, which is a yellow arrow pointing up that lets you upgrade technology. There are two levels that you upgrade your technology to. The first level is symbolized by a circle, and any technology can be upgraded to the circle level, regardless of prerequisites. There's no prerequisites to do so. And when you do that, you get whatever benefit is in the circle space on the technology card. Then you can also upgrade cards that are in the circle level by your player board to the square level, which is the final level. But those will have prerequisites, and you do that whenever you take the yellow arrow. And every time you take that yellow arrow action, you only upgrade one card.
Right. And the prerequisites require either you or one of your neighbors to be at some sort of level. This is either a space or a certain tier on a track, or having a certain part of your income mat revealed.
Right. So for the most part, you won't be able to upgrade technology to the highest tier until
mid to late game.
So again, technology is about acquiring these technology cards and then advancing them. And as you advance them, you acquire rewards.
Right.
And generally, the reward in the square is a very significant reward.
Yeah.
Because it takes time and also prerequisites to get to that point.
Right.
The final tracker is science. And the special action that happens on the science tracker is... I don't know what the name of it is.
The science die. It's researching.
Researching. Okay. Yes. So the research action is represented by a polyhedral die, a 12-sided die. Yeah. And every time you take that action from the science tracker, you roll the science die, which has a symbol representing each tracker on the board. And each symbol shows up three times. So it's an equal distribution. And when you roll the die, you advance on the tracker, or you may advance on the tracker that you roll. So for example, if you take the research action and you roll exploration, then you may advance your piece on the exploration tracker for free. Now, if there is a little X symbol that accompanies the research symbol, then that means that if you take that advancement, you do not actually get the benefit or the bonuses of advancing on that tracker. So like if you rolled exploration and you advanced on it and the next space says that you can explore a tile, if you have the little X symbol on the science track, then you don't actually do that. You just move forward.
Right.
But if there is no X, then that means you do take the action. Also, later on in the science tracker, it starts to just let you choose which tracker to advance on. But on those, you cannot choose the science tracker.
Right.
It'll only be the other tracker. So the gist of what the science tracker does is it helps you advance on the other trackers for free.
Yeah. And the reason you would want to advance for free is because of landmarks.
Right.
So at the start of the game.
But. Whoa. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about capital cities.
Yeah. So at the start of the game, one of the things you get is your capital city board. And this also determines where on the main board you start. Each capital city is based off like a different type of terrain, like mountain or wetland, and they all have a number that relates to a number of like the starting spaces on the main board, the main map. But the capital city is like a Sudoku grid. It is a 9x9 grid divided into 3x3 squares or smaller grids.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these spaces in every grid start with a red dot, meaning they are filled in. They are unable to be built upon. But when you gain income buildings, which I guess we haven't actually described yet, or when you gain landmarks, you put them on your capital city board in an unoccupied space. And when you fill out an entire 3x3 section, you get one of any resource. And as you fill in rows and columns on this board, you get points from part of your income.
Right.
And so I guess let's talk about income.
Okay. Well, we should mention that the landmark buildings, the income buildings are, they only take up one space, and we're just about to talk about what those do. So just be patient for that. But the landmarks that you mentioned, you acquire them by being the first to reach any given tier on a advancement tracker. They're unique. So only the first person to reach them acquires them, and then they are unavailable for the rest of the game. And these spaces take up, or these buildings take up multiple spaces in various shapes on your capital city. So the smallest one will be like a 2x2 square, but they can get as big as a 3x3 square or sort of an L shape where the sides of the L are two spaces wide.
You mean four?
Yeah, two spaces thick, four spaces wide. Right, so they get in all different crazy shapes, and they are very good at filling up your income or your capital city, which again gives you resources and points. All right, so let's talk about income.
So, and yes,
income buildings. So, certain actions on the advancement trackers will have you acquire income buildings. On your main player board, you have four income trackers that are nearly entirely covered up by these buildings at the start of the game. They have six spaces, and each space will have a building except for the first one at the start of the game.
Right.
Whenever you take the income action, whatever spaces are uncovered are the benefits that you gain from your income. And so the way that you uncover those spaces is by building those buildings in your capital city. So on each tracker, you'll see a little symbol that looks like a tiny building. There's four different kinds of buildings, one for each tracker. So whenever you see that action, whenever you take that action by advancing on a tracker or by taking that action through some other means, you will take the corresponding color building the furthest to the left on your tracker, and then you'll place it in one of the spaces on your capital city. So this is another way of filling up rows and columns for points, or another way of filling up 3x3 squares to get resources. But the other thing that this does is it uncovers more spaces on your income tracker, which means that when you take your income action, you get more resources and points.
Right.
So at that, let's go into more detail on what the income action is.
Yes.
Because you take it at the start of the game, but you don't take the full income action. There's four steps to the income action, and depending on what age you're advancing to, you'll only take some of those steps.
Right.
So the first age, the only step you take is the fourth step, which is to collect resources. For the second, third, and fourth age, you take all four steps, and then the fifth age, you will only take the third step. So just to go through all four steps in order and what they do, the first step is your civilization. If your civilization has an ability, it will trigger, that triggers during income. It happens at the very start of your income turn. The second action is to play a tapestry card from your hand. The tapestry cards is sort of like a symbol of your civilization in the next age. And they can be something like oil magnate or meritocracy or age of sail. And every tapestry has an effect associated with them that will either occur at this point in the income, or it'll just be like some constant effect that will affect your next age until you advance to the next one, get a new tapestry. There are slots on your board where these tapestries go, so you don't cover them up unless you take other certain actions. Anyways. The third thing that you do during income is you upgrade technology and score points. So if you have any technology off to the right of your board, you get to choose one of them to upgrade to the next tier as long as you meet prerequisites. And then as for scoring points, on your income trackers where your buildings were, you can sometimes uncover ways of earning points. At the start, you have some ways of earning points, and you will uncover more as you go. Right. So this is where you score those points. And then the final thing you do is collect resources, and that's all just counting the number of visible resource icons there are on your income tracker and moving your resource tokens along your resource tracker to indicate how many you have earned.
Right.
By the way, there's a resource tracker, and you can never have more than eight of any given resource.
Right. I was going to say second space of every income track is an additional resource of that type. And I think the third space is additional scoring space of that type. The ways you can get points from income this way are the markets, which are yellow and give you money. They give you points for every technology card you have.
Mm-hmm.
The houses, which are gray and give you workers, give you points for every row and column completed in your capital city. the farms, which are brown and give you food, just have flat point values they give you. And then the armories that are red and give you culture give you points for every space you conquer or you have controlled.
With your outposts.
Yeah, every space you control.
All right, there's two more important things that we need to talk about before we can get into strategy. And those are the civilizations themselves. And I think the other thing is the upgrade bonus. Or the first to next age bonus. Okay, so the civilizations, there's a bunch of them that come in the game. I think there's like 12.
It's something in the
10. I think there's 12. I think it's 12 because it's enough that everyone is dealt two.
Yeah.
In a six-player game, which is a max number of players. And the tapestries give you... They kind of give you a theme for your civilization. And they usually give you a unique effect that doesn't appear on any of the other cards.
Yeah, they usually reward you for going down a certain track or doing some sort of action.
Yeah. Just to give an example of some of the civilizations that you can have, there's... Futurists, which allows you to start four spaces ahead of the other players on a tracker, on an advancement track. There is the Nomads, which can choose to put their income buildings on the map instead of in their capital city and sort of spread a very sprawling civilization.
There's architects who get double the bonus from their capital cities, whether it's resources or points. There is leaders who just can advance each tracker once for free, but they only do so one at a time during income turns.
Mm-hmm. There's inventors, which they invent technologies faster, and they also... They get to invent more tech cards than other civilizations.
They invent them more often, they ignore prerequisites, and they can steal other players' tech cards.
Yes.
If you invent their tech cards for them.
There's militants who get rewarded for placing more outposts.
Right. There's heralds, which reuse tapestries that give you a one-time effect.
Mm-hmm.
There's...
right.
Oh, yeah, so...
So there's all sorts of civilizations, and they'll give you a theme, they'll give you an idea of a strategy that you might take for that game, and they usually reward you with bonus points, bonus resources, or by making certain actions more efficient.
Right. Then something you mentioned very briefly was that if you are the first among you and your neighbors to go to the next age, then you get a resource bonus. If you're the first to go to age 2, then you get 1 of any resource. If you're the first to go to age 3, then you get 2 of any resource. And if you're the first to go to age 4, you get 3 of any resource.
All right.
Additionally, on the board, there are 3 achievements that if you're the first to do specific actions, you get points. And if you're second or sometimes third, you'll get points. These are to be the first to reach the end of an advancement track. You'll get 15 points for first, 10 for second, 5 for third. There is the first player to topple 2 enemy outposts of any enemies, and that's 15, 10, and 5. And then the first player to put an outpost on the middle of the board, which is a single hex tile in the middle that starts unveiled, or starts on the board, then you also get 10 points if you're first and 5 if you're second.
Right.
And you can't have a third player control that. So, there's only 2.
All right. Right. Yeah. And it's 10 and 5, like you said. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I think that's about everything that we need to explain about this game and how to play it.
At least at the moment, yeah.
At least at the moment.
We forgot one thing about exploration.
What's that?
That you can get points when you place exploration tiles, because the tiles you get have land masses on them. And the land masses are divided into different biomes. So, like, there's desert, there's grass, there's forest, there's mountain. And then, of course, there's water. Mm-hmm. And if you line it up so that any of the faces of the tile are touching the same like landmark or landmass on adjacent tiles, you get points for each side that matches at least once. So, for example, like a side can have two terrain types touching it. So, like, a side can be like, you know, forest and mountain are on one edge of this tile, and then every other edge is water. So if you place that next to a tile where one edge is entirely forest, you'll get 1 point for that forest matching.
Right.
And you can get up to 6 points this way, of course.
Right, because these are hexagonal tiles, so the most tiles that they could be surrounded by is six.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. Strategy. So we're talking a lot about, we talked about the advancements and how when you advance on an advancement track, you take a special action. We talked about what each advancement track's theme is. We talked about how the advancement tracks will also give you income buildings, which will then give you more resources every time you advance to a new age. We talked about playing tapestry cards at the start of those ages and how those tapestry cards have effects. So how do you win at tapestry?
So I want to make sort of two big points off the bat. Okay. One of which is it seems like you get the most points from your income scoring.
Right.
Because these they're like multiplicative. So like for each symbol you have revealed, you get that scoring again. So if you have three symbols that score your capital city, then it's three times the rows and columns. And these also happen pretty frequently. So like just between those symbols and the last two ages, you can get 100 points maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe at least 70, you know, at least 60.
You can get at least 50.
You can get a lot of points, yeah. So you want to like try and build an engine that focuses on those. And in regards to building an engine, you want to get income buildings.
Right.
Because these give you more resources, which let you take more actions. And since not everybody ends at the same time, if you end the game last, meaning you are the last person to take your final income action, then you get technically more turns to get other points or do other goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that is only possible by having more resources. So yeah, resource production is very good. There is also tapestry cards can be very good. These can either give you point swings, but more often they give you really efficient actions.
Right. So tapestry cards can make or break a strategy. Like we talked about how civilizations can sort of form the idea of what your strategy is going to be. But the real strategy comes from the tapestry cards. Because they give you, I mean, if you can make use of the value that they give you, you know, this is where you're going to generate the most value in the game is through these tapestry cards.
Yeah.
So for example, there's one called Pillage and Plunder that says whenever you conquer an opponent's territory, gain the results of both conquer dice, and traps cannot be played against you. Traps, by the way, are cards that are mixed in with the tapestry cards that prevent your pieces from being toppled via conquering. So this is one card that says, like, if you have this tapestry card, then you're going to want to try to get to a situation where you can topple a couple different opponents' pieces. And then when you go into the age, you play this tapestry, you start doing that, you're going to get a lot of value by being able to get both the resources and the points from the conquer dice.
Right, yeah. Or another one that I remember was Dark Ages, which is you regress on three tracks in any combination, and then you advance on, or no, you regress one space on three tracks, you advance three spaces on the remaining track, which means that it gives you a huge boost in one track, which can often just get you a landmark immediately. I mean,
with three advancements is guaranteed to give you any landmark.
True, yeah.
As long as you're ahead on the track.
Yeah.
Or as long as you're not three spaces behind the next player, first player.
So these can be huge.
Just one more example. This one says, when you gain income, gain 2 points per gold you earned. And then whenever you gain a yellow income building, also gain 1 gold.
Yeah.
So that's just a way of getting more value out of... Since every action takes resources, being able to generate bonus resources from taking certain actions is pretty strong.
Yeah. Usually you don't want to try to focus too hard on like what your opener is going to be until you've gotten your first tapestry. There's some civilizations where like you're going to do pretty much the same thing most games because they're that good. Like militants, you almost always want to go military, or nomads, you often want to go for armories so that you score off of controlled territories.
Yeah, nomads will end up controlling a lot of territory.
Yeah, inventors want tech cards, but, you know, other than that, tapestries can help really guide you, because you want to make sure you're getting, like you said, the most value from them.
Right.
Let's see. So I do want to mention, so far in at least three of the four games I've played, technology has been the victor, somebody who specializes in technology. I want to say it's usually a good idea to specialize in one track at least, maybe two, because you want to be competitive for those landmarks because they give you big resource boosts and point boosts. And the best spaces in tracks are often in the third and fourth tiers. So, like, you want to be advancing through a few tracks to make sure you can get to those later spaces.
Right.
So, technology is one of the easier ones to get points from itself, because the yellow income buildings just give you points for having a lot of technology cards, which you will do if you go down this track that gives you the yellow buildings.
Right. For comparison, the way that you get gray income buildings is on the science tracker. And the science tracker doesn't give you a lot of income buildings. It really only gives you a handful of gray ones. But on the gray income tracker is where you score points for having rows and columns completed in your capital city. So there's not really a synergy there, well, because you need a lot of
Technically, rolling the science die makes it easier to get other income buildings. I mean, other landmarks.
That's true. It's a little too random to be,
It's, you know, it's reliable. A little volatile, so it's a little harder.
But the yellow one is like directly, it's totally viable, and there's no randomness that's going to prevent you from getting that synergy.
Yeah.
With the yellow income buildings, which is on the technology tracker.
And there's a lot of tech cards that reward you for playing more tech cards, like glasses, which has the score ability to score points for every tech card you have. And I think it's assembly line, which lets you redo circle and square abilities as you upgrade it.
Yeah, it lets you reactivate those upgraded abilities on other tech cards.
Yeah.
Which is also an effect that happens towards the end of the tech advancement tracker.
Yeah. It should also be noted that technology cards and exploration tiles can give you income buildings fairly frequently. There's a lot of both that give you income buildings, more so with tech cards, it feels like. So that's just another benefit to that.
I think it might be like there's like one of each or two of each in the tiles and in the tech cards. There's just less tech cards
and there's more ways to cycle through. Tech is good.
Tech is very efficient and very synergistic.
The
other trackers, they sort of either depend on another tracker or they don't have as much synergy.
Or both. Yeah, they don't have synergy in a vacuum. They're often more reliant on your civilization.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, Architect would probably want to have science in its plans because architects want to fill in their capital city board, you know? And futurists are less likely to go tech, because they skip two spaces that give you technology cards. So they just have a slower start to that. I do want to talk about openers, though. Some of these I have tested. Some of these are a bit more theory crafting. But I have like a few possible openers I want to bring up.
Okay.
So the first off is 3T, which is 3 technology. This is just very fast technology gains. In fact, this is basically saying I'm going to prioritize technology.
This is usually best when you can guarantee that you'll get a technology card that gives you an income building.
Yeah.
So, that's when this strat's at its strongest.
Yeah, it's especially good. Like, you really want to only decide to do this after you see what the first three technology cards in the trade row are. So, because, yeah, the first technology space gives you a card. Second one gives you a tapestry and an income building if you pay the bonus, which you can or can't. You know, usually I would take the income building from that one and then take the card from the second, the third space on that track. Mm-hmm. Because the third income space, the second income building is just points. So for at least for like age one, it doesn't matter as much to get the third space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The next
opener, hopefully our listeners do too.
Yeah. The next opener I have is One Tech, One Science. Pretty much this is the best way I could come up with to make the science die less risky. Because you don't want to skip the first technology space with the science die without getting the benefit. Military, you might not want to skip. But,
military, there's a ton of opportunities throughout the whole tracker to conquer spaces.
Yeah, so it's not as big of a loss. In the technology tracker,
there's not a lot of opportunities to invent cards.
Yeah, there's maybe like four altogether.
Let's see, one, two,
four or five.
Three. There's four, and one of them is a bonus.
Yeah.
There's four after the first one. There's four benefits and one bonus, and one of those benefits is on the very first space. And this is something that I accidentally did in one of our sessions, was my first action was to go on the science tracker and roll the science die, and I rolled the technology tracker and I decided to advance on that. And what that means was I would have to spend two resources and two whole turns to invent one technology, and that was just too steep of a price to pay when there are more pressing things to do in the game.
If you're not competing for a landmark on the other three tracks, it's good to at least get one tech card before age two, before you take your next income action.
Right.
So we like to talk about something to upgrade.
Yeah. We like to talk about generating free value. And in this game, one of the opportunities that everybody has is just having one technology card.
Yeah.
Because upgrading your technology and gaining rewards for it is part of your income. And so is gaining points for every technology card you have. You start with a space uncovered that gives you points for every technology card you have.
Yeah, so it's technically 1 point.
So, or it's technically five.
Well,
or
sure,
four points, because you score that four times over the course of the game. So not doing that, not taking that first technology card when it costs one generic resource to acquire, is kind of like leaving a lot of value on the table in this game.
And since you start with one tile to explore with, it's kind of okay to skip the scout action, which is the first tier of exploration track.
Yeah, you really only need to take that if the tile that you drew was bad.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it's never going to be bad.
Yeah. Then the next one I have is 4 exploration, 4E. This is basically the consistent way to get the first landmark on a track, because exploration is the most consistent to get you a resource when you do it. You could do this with military as well, but it's not a guarantee that you'll get a resource when you roll the conquer die, unless you control a space that has a resource on it. Because the conquer die has 4 faces, 1 for each resource, and then 2 faces that are gain a resource of a space you control. And at the start of the game, you don't control any spaces with resources on them. So it's a lot less consistent.
Right.
Exploration then is the most consistent way to get 5 resources, which is what you need to be able to advance to the 4th space, which is the first space in the second tier. And this is especially good, I think, for something like nomads that wants to get a lot of spaces to conquer by themselves or something like that. Because, you know, to conquer spaces, you need spaces available. And so doing this gives you a landmark and it opens up spaces for you to start conquering. And then it makes your conquer dice not risky.
Right.
This is especially good as well if you start with a exploration tile that has like an income building on it. Or something good.
If you start with one that has an income building on it, then that means you probably won't be able to pay the bonus for the second tier or for the second space on the advancement tracker. And that bonus is to draw a new tapestry card. You won't need that unless the first tapestry you drew for the game was bad.
Yeah.
If it was bad, then you're hoping to get spaces that give you resources, because if you draw two tiles that give you resources and you explore both of them in the first tier of the exploration tracker, then those two tiles will give you two resources, which should give you just enough to advance to the second tier, the fourth space.
Yeah. Now the last opener that I have theory crafted is 2E2M to explore 2 military. This is another one for like things like nomads or militants that want a lot of conquers, because this means that you draw two tiles, you're going to play a tile that gives you a resource and get that resource, and then you conquer that space, and then you get the resource from the conquer die. And then this way you're also getting two tapestries during this, because the bonus for the second space on exploration is to get a tapestry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the benefit of the second space on military is drawing a tapestry.
Right. So this is a consistent way to get six resources, which means that you can take both of those bonuses, because the bonus on the military space is to get a building. So this is sort of like just, this is maybe better for heralds as well, if you don't have a good tapestry to start with them. Or even if you do, because they're the only civilization that can play a tapestry on the first income.
Mm-hmm.
This just draws you two tapestries and gets the ball rolling otherwise.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are all good openings to test out.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen success with the technology tracker the most. But I think in some of our games, the person who focused a lot on exploring and conquering got very close to second place, or got very close to getting first place.
Yeah.
In some cases. In other cases, the person in first was very far ahead, and that's usually because they just had a lot of synergy across like their strategy, their income, their tapestries, and their civilization.
Yeah.
And I think that's the last point that I have to make about strategy and how to win, is that it's better to focus than to diversify in this game.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much synergy built into the design of this game, that it, like, everything gets multiplicative as long as you're focusing on one thing.
Right.
And that multiplicative, you know, element to how you score points is what's going to give you the most points.
Exactly. All right.
We could go really quick about some of the civilizations in this game.
Sure.
There's a lot of hot discussion online about which ones are too strong.
Yeah.
If they are. And from our playthrough, we've seen futurists do very well, which start four spaces ahead on the advancement trackers and with one bonus resource of every type. I mean, they need the bonus resource because all of the actions on the advancement trackers that they have available to them are twice as expensive as the ones that the other players have to go through. But they're also like twice as efficient in some cases.
Right. Except for technology.
Except for technology. So we've seen futurists do very well. They don't get the landmark, the first landmark, but they're very good at acquiring the second landmark on like every tracker.
Yeah.
And those are the biggest landmarks. So they're very good at filling up their board. The other one that we've seen a lot of success on is heralds, which get a lot of value from tapestries, which, like we said, can be very powerful. And they get to reuse tapestries, not only their own tapestries, but other players' tapestries. So if somebody else plays a strong tapestry, the Herald gets that benefit and then some, because they also get to play their own tapestry.
Right, yeah. The we've had the Nomads come really close as well.
Yes.
I think the last game we played, Herald's won with like a perfect storm of tapestries and technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think Nomads could have won, because Nomads get a lot of points from scoring conquered spaces really easily.
Right. I believe that
conquer more spaces than anybody else.
The Heralds played like a near perfect game, and the Nomads played a pretty suboptimal game. Because I mean, I was playing the Nomads, and like I said, I messed up the technology at the start of the game, and then I also focused too heavily on science, which has nothing to do with conquering space on the board. I should have focused more on military, which would have given me more points. But even with a suboptimal play, I ended up in second place, down by 60 points. Which sounds like a lot, but one of the games we played with Futurists was over 100-point lead against the rest of the pack.
Yeah.
Those three,
pretty early on as well.
Those three civilizations could be strong. They were strong in the games that they were played in with our play group, but that's just our, you know, experiences with them.
Yeah, I've heard Mystics do well. I've heard Historians do well. Mm-hmm. Militants do well. I think the ones that are the worst are Isolationists and Chosen.
Okay.
Because Chosen require you to either be further ahead on a track to get 1 point per track, or they require you to get get achievements to get resources. So mm-hmm. like, there's stuff that's harder to do. Well, like, it's harder to get the points later in the game, or even early in the game, and it's hard to get the resources early in the game to where it's like particularly useful. And then Isolationists are really hard to get points from as well, because they get extra points based on a congruent landmass, but it's really easy to get locked in and like only get 4 points from that, because it's not just a congruent landmass, it's a congruent land mass of a single terrain. So like, if you play 3 tiles that connect to each other that all have forest, but you can't touch those forests with another forest, then you're kind of, you know, you can't expand that forest anymore.
Right.
So those just take, like, way too much work to get the same value other players do.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's about all we have to say on the strategy portion of this game.
Yes.
So let's get into the design.
All right.
One thing I want to point out about this game is that there's a problem that some games have where they will assign icons to represent the various actions that you take in that game. And so learning how to play a game like that takes, you know, you have to learn essentially a new language, because, you know, at some point an icon is kind of meaningless, and you have to just understand, you know, by memory what each icon means.
Yeah.
One thing that this game does to help with that effect is that, like, they use icons to represent the actions, and like, they only use those icons, and they constantly reuse those icons.
Yeah, there's maybe so, like 10 unique icons at least for most of the game.
That's a good point, because one of the conventions they could have an icon of something, but then they could have the same icon with a wreath around it, which means you're scoring points for whatever that icon represents.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that actually changes the meaning of the icon. Like, for example, if you see an icon that is the symbol for a tracker, usually that means that you advance on that tracker. So, like, when you roll on the science die, you'll see an icon that represents a tracker. Each tracker has their own unique icon. That means you advance on it. And later on in the science track, there's those icons again, and you choose which mm-hmm. track to advance on. If that symbol is within a wreath, then you're no longer advancing. It means that you are scoring a point for how far you've advanced on that tracker. So it's a slightly different meaning.
Well, I think
it's close enough that it makes sense.
I was going to say, syntactically, is that the word? By the syntax, it's just saying score 4x, so it's score 4 advancement.
Right.
Kind of like their score for invention.
But it's not like you move and then score. You're no longer moving your piece.
Yeah, but the wreath it's around a different meaning. The wreath around the technology card isn't gain a tech card, then score it. It's also just score for each technology card.
Okay, I guess actually you're right. Like the wreath has a solid meaning. The symbol inside the wreath changes meaning, but the wreath changes that meaning in a consistent way every time. Yeah. Which is you're no longer adding or gaining, you're counting.
Yeah. But like on the symbols on like the tiles and the technology cards are the same ones that appear on the board.
Yes, that was something I want to say, that every symbol on the board appears on the technology cards, except I think the one that says to reset all the cards in the technology row.
Yeah.
I think that's the only one. Every other. Oh, and then also the space tiles.
I think a better way to put it is all the symbols that appear on the tech cards and the tiles appear on the board, because the board is omnipresent. You always are looking at it. It's always there. You can always look at the reminder sheet. And so that's like you study that for most of the game. So the things that come up suddenly, the tapestries, the tech cards, the tiles, those are reflected on the thing you're studying the whole time.
Right.
And I think it's also good that
the ones that appear on the ones that only appear on the board are only in the later ages, third age or late in the second.
These are also like the most complicated ones.
Yes. And so you don't get to them until you already have a solid grasp of what all the other effects mean.
Yeah. For the first two ages, the first two tiers, each track really just wants like two things unique. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a lot of time to learn those things that are foundational. You know, your pace in terms of how much you need to learn. Let's see. So I want to mention something. So this is sort of a large analysis of this game. But so this game is not conventionally a civilization game. And this is a thing I've seen directed as a complaint against the game a few times. Conventionally, Civ games, have a certain mechanical identity alongside their thematic identity of starting and managing and progressing a civilization. But Tapestry is very different. You know, battles aren't like based on units or war power. It's just a binary win-lose. There's no trading with like other players or even NPCs. There's no tech trees, only prerequisites. So you're not like advancing the wheel before you invent carts, before you invent, cars. Stuff like that, that you even see in things like Seven Wonders. But to be fair, like, you don't have to follow genre conventions. I think the other complaint was that, like, it didn't market itself enough as being a not-Civ game with a Civ game theme. But this also does a very interesting thing to the game, which Tapestry is, like, heavily based around narrative equity. This is the idea that a game can be designed towards being able to tell stories about it. A good example is like an RPG is 100% narrative equity. You will see people talk about the things their character did or the things that happened in their RPG sessions. Like telling a story about playing a game is sort of this concept. Or the weird stories that emerge through gameplay also fit this. So this is sort of like there aren't any tech trees because, to be fair, along with being mechanically simpler and taking up less table real estate, it's kind of a funny story to be inventing time travel before you've gotten your first factory or whatever.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have a lighthouse in order to invent flashlights.
Right. It's funny that my civilization has created video games before we've even learned how to farm.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, it's sort of given a thematic pass because, to be fair, it's just kind of a funny story. Mm-hmm. But also what I think is really interesting is that the scale of this game is zoomed out. So, like, in a lot of Civ games, you'll see things that put, like, an emphasis on individual people, like leaders or historical figures, or like the battles will be between specific units that have like, you know, a unit, like an actual person fighting, or even just numbers kind of put more individualistic to it. But with Tapestry being so zoomed out and like most things in the game don't actually show any people, really just the civilizations and the Tapestry cards. Most of the game kind of doesn't actually show any people. It's more like a continuous flow of history instead right. of a series of vignettes presented as history, which beyond being interesting, kind of lets you view it as a story a bit easier, in my opinion. You know, it's like, oh, my civilization, you know, we reach the AI singularity after conquering the whole board. You know, mm-hmm. when you talk about stories, it doesn't often care about one battle. Sometimes it'll care about just the entire outcome of the series of things. I don't know. I think it's interesting, at least. It's something to think about, I think, when you're making a game that takes place over a long time span in terms of the game's flavor. Is like, are you showing snapshots of that time span or a broader connection through the time span?
Mm-hmm.
It also makes it a bit more abstract, which is weird. Like, the game doesn't have a whole lot of flavor going on in its mechanics. Like, you know, it's not as tied to flavor as something like, I don't know, like, you know, Agricola, maybe. Or even, like, Through the Ages. But I think that's interesting. Also, mm-hmm. so with the emphasis on narrative equity, I want to point out that most of the sessions that I've seen, either that I've played or that I've seen other people report on, have had 100-point differences in some part between, like, some placement. Usually I've seen this between first and second, and I want to give this sort of a sort of zoom in, a focus, because for one thing, if there's the only big differences between first and second place, it doesn't really matter mechanically if it's a big difference, if that makes sense. So, like, I guess I should clarify this a bit backwards. So, I haven't... it like, usually these don't appear until the final turn or two. These, like, point imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this is a problem mechanically. It feels like it's meant to have a huge point imbalance between first and second, to have this sort of, like, reigning supreme, you know, ending to it.
Mm-hmm.
That one thing is so on top, it's definitively on top. You know, I think that adds to some amount of storytelling, but it does make it feel worse when you lose. Because, like, just as far as mindset goes, it feels like it's easier to justify a close game and feel good about a close game than it is like a game that has a 100-point difference, even if the game always has a 100-point difference and it's not something you see until the final turn.
Right. So I think the biggest thing about the difference between a big difference and a little difference between two players is that a little difference seems like surmountable.
Yeah.
Even if it's the end of the game and the game's over, you think like, oh, I probably could have won. Like, if I had made one slight decision, and for some people, that's a good feeling. That's like, yeah, I could have won. I almost won. I might as well chalk this up to a half victory.
Yeah.
But when it is so big, when it's like 100 points, it starts to feel like there's just nothing you could do to have won that game. Like, it didn't matter how good you were at playing board games. They just won, and
right,
every little advantage you could have gained would have not made a difference.
Right. Even if the early turns were close, even if in the last turn it feels like you have this huge change, then it feels pretty bad.
Right. Now, and I'm thinking, like, would a spike like that or not like that? And I think at that point it becomes about how they won rather than by how much.
Yeah.
So if somebody just literally like strategically outplayed you at every turn and then finished the game with a 100-point victory, that's better than if they got lucky with a couple different things. Like they were dealt a good civilization and then they drew a bunch of very powerful tapestries you know, at that point, there's nothing you could have done to stop them from happening, to stop that from happening. The only thing you maybe could have done in this game is taking away powerful tech cards.
Yeah.
Everything else is a little bit out of your control.
Yeah.
And so that can feel a little bad.
Yeah. This is sort of a really weird thing that I've been having a hard time really... like, I've been sort of reflective after playing this game, because, like, it shouldn't have to feel as bad as it does sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with more games having, like, a huge point difference at the final part. Maybe not early in the game or mid-game, but by the end of the game. It's just, this is, like, such an unusual thing that it feels almost challenging to, in like, in terms of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, usually point differences are close throughout the entire game, or they're imbalanced throughout the entire game, and we've assigned a very clear good and bad to those. Mm-hmm. But this is something where, like, I think it does have a problem with, like, it does have a negative impact if you're not, if you're competitive to the point where you want to win, but not competitive to the point where, like, you view it as a puzzle on how could you have outplayed.
Mm-hmm.
So like this can have a negative impact on the losing side, so to speak, which I think can often outweigh the winner, but it's also incredibly based on the player's mindset. Like, if you're the type to say, you know, I played the game and had a good time during it, the outcome doesn't really matter, then it doesn't matter.
Also, if you're the kind that just likes big experiences, you know, sometimes just seeing another player get really huge points can be exciting enough.
I think that's what I'm trying to say, is like, it's really hard to say whether this is good or bad. It's just different. And mm-hmm. I think it's worth, you know, considering that as not just good or bad, but different in terms of the perspective of a designer. You know, to find new feelings and experiences in game design can be kind of rare. And so I think something like this that's kind of unconventional, but not being like outright garbage, is worth thinking about, at least, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What can you learn from it, and how you experience games and how other people experience games?
Sure.
So that's just sort of a weird like zoom out that the game made me have.
Real quick, I want to say that the reason that this probably happens in this game is just because there's a lot of like multiplicative synergy in how points are scored, and not a lot of like benefits for being a diverse or for having a diverse strategy. So it's and then some of those multiplicative things come from random elements in the game. So the person who gets those random elements and then can multiply their multiplier is going to have a ton of points. And those random elements are exclusive, so only one person can really gain the benefits of them. So that's usually why that happens in this game.
Personally, I've never felt like the randomness was like completely unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels to me like I'm able to outplay the randomness in some way, mitigate it, or prepare for it.
I don't know if you've had a game where you've gotten garbage tapestries yet, though, because that can be a pretty frustrating thing that's a little hard to deal with. Okay. I mean, the way that you deal with it is by drawing more tapestries, but those can feel like suboptimal turns.
Yeah. Honestly, I think the imbalance of the tapestries is the biggest problem with the game. That they're very, like, I think even more so than any imbalances in Civilizations.
Yeah.
You know.
I think I agree with that.
One more good thing I want to touch on about narrative equity is it can kind of drive gameplay. So specifically, the final spaces, so each space on the trackers, both the income trackers and the trackers on the board, they each have a title for what they are. Like you mentioned, video games, which is on the culture building track.
It's on the military building track.
That's culture.
Oh yeah, culture. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And the final spaces in the tracks on the board all have really ridiculous names. Like the final one on the technology board is AI Singularity, The final one on science is alien technology, I think. The final one
alien biology.
Alien biology. The one on military is what, like world domination?
It's mechs.
Mechs. Oh, mechs.
But the one previous to that is drone assassins.
Okay, yeah. And I think this is great because those sound wild and like insane. And
on it income makes you... trackers, it's biometrics, neural implants, food printing, and virtual reality.
Yeah. So like it almost encourages you to specialize and get to those last parts by like having this really awesome, outlandish thing you can reach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just reaching the realistic end point. It's reaching this futuristic, you know, crazy version, and it makes it desirable to reach the end of those, which makes it like from the get-go, if you're driven by thematic experiences or by narrative experiences, you still want to specialize in a few tracks and reach the end of them. Those also are where like the most unique mechanics are, so if you're a fan of having interesting diverse, you know, gameplay, then those also are appealing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of puts these presents at the end of the tracks that are like, you know, not just rewards for points, but rewards in terms of the experience.
Yeah.
And really, I think that's what the takeaway of this game is. Experience.
Well, I had a couple more mechanical design decisions, but I think I like just ending it right there.
Oh, whoops.
That's all right. The mechanical stuff is just boring stuff about how like, you know, some mechanical parts about this game that make it a well-designed game.
Oh.
But I don't know, we talked about that in a lot of other episodes.
Yeah, this is an hour long already.
Yeah, so let's call it there.
Sure.
Let's end on that nice note.
That nice about, segue.
About what it's all about.
The nice thesis.
So with that small conclusion statement, that'll be the end of our episode on Tapestry. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you like what you hear, you can follow us and leave comments on social media on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. You can hit us up with suggestions for games that you'd like to hear our thoughts on there. You can follow our podcast on any podcasting platform and leave reviews if you're so inclined. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and tagged. If you're looking for an episode where we talk about a particular game, find the tags, find the episode. Or click on the tag and that'll take you to the episode. If you don't see that episode again, hit us up on social media. Also on our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. And that is where we post all of our cool, or that's where we host all of our merch, our cool logo on some cool shirts. You can pick it up there. And that'll do it for Board Game Bros plugs. So let's hear it for Matthew plugs.
I write articles on the Board Game Bros website under the Episodes and Articles tab. My most recent article was about the game Untitled Goose Game and some interesting things it does design-wise. Just sort of like a mini review. But I often write about design, writing, game design, whatever kind of strikes my fancy at the moment. And you can get updates for that on my Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I also announce when I go live on Twitch, in which I stream. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I've been streaming later at about 1 a.m. or 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. Central Time to like 4 or 3 p.m. Central Time. I stream a lot of Metroidvanias and platformers. I stream a lot of difficult games, a lot of competitive games, a lot of roguelites. I speedrun a game called Hob. So you can find all that on that Twitch page, and also through that page you can find a Discord server where you can get updates on my articles and when I go live, as well as talk to other fans of my work and our work on the podcast.
That'll do it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.